From the Land-Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Mark Report. It's the 23rd day of December 2008. I'm Todd Gleason. In a few moments, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Wayne Nelson of L&M Commodities. He's in New Market, Indiana. And then K-State's Mike Wolverton will join us to take a closer look at the agricultural energy markets. In agricultural news, a former USTR negotiator says bailing out the auto industry and others could allow reciprocal action to take place at the WTO. The OPEC ministers are planning to meet again soon. And Verizon is seeking permission to rework an agreement with Shell. Dave Dickey will have details of these and other stories shortly. And then, in just 26 minutes, meteorologist Don Day will join us for a complete look at today's agricultural weather forecast. So stay with us, won't you, for this Tuesday edition of the Closing Market Report. The Closing Mark Report is a production of Public Radio from the University of Illinois.
The Closing Market Report is made possible by AgriGold Hybrids, funding agricultural programming as an additional service to the many AgriGold customers in the AM580 listening area. AgriGold, the corn specialists. More information is at AgriGold.com or at 800-262-7333.
On this Tuesday afternoon, futures in Chicago finished the day like this. The nearby March wheat up 6.25 cents at $5.75 1/4. May at $5.87 3/4, up 6 1/4. And July wheat at $5.98 1/4 for the harvest month, up 4 3/4. September for the soft red at $6.19 1/4, 5.5 cents higher. March wheat in Kansas City at $5.94, up 4 3/4 for the hard red. And the spring at $6.25 1/4, down 5 3/4 at the Minneapolis Grain Exchange. March corn futures today, 13 cents the gain at $3.94 3/4. May at $4.05, up 13. July 4.15 1/4, up 12 3/4, and September corn 4.25 3/4, up 12 3/4. December at 4.39 3/4, up 12 3/4 as well. Ethanol futures are trading at $1.55 9/10. They're unchanged on the day. February crude oil at $39.40, down 51 cents for the afternoon. Soy complex, January beans $9.01. Up 14.5, the March at 9.05, up 14.5, and the May futures 9.16, up 14.5 cents. July soybeans 9.27, finished 14.5 cents higher as well. And the November up 12.5 cents today at $9.28 3/4. January bean meal up $5.90 at $2.81.40. And the livestock finished the nearby lean hogs at $61.20, up 30 cents this afternoon. You're listening to the Closing Market Report. Here's what some of the rest of the numbers look like. December live cattle at 85.65, 32.5 cents lower. February at 86.95, up 70. January feeders at 93.60, up 22.5 cents on the afternoon. March crude oil at 42.25, down 63 cents. January natural gas at 571.5, 42.5 and a tenth of a cent higher today for the natural gas. The February at $5.75 6/10, up 42 6/10. Our Bob gasoline, just about 3 cents lower at 85. That's 85 6/10 of a cent. And February our Bob at 90 1/10, down 2 6/10. January heating oil or diesel fuel at $1.32 7/10. 1 4/10 lower. February at 134.5, down 1 6/10 of a cent. And propane futures are 2 9/10 lower at 62 3/10 of a cent for the nearby January, and the February down 3 2 cents for the day. Gold futures at 837.20, down $9, and the Dow Jones Industrial Average now stands at 84.21. It's just about 97 points lower on the afternoon. U.S. dollar at 81.24. up 0.06. Here's what the forecast for the two-state region looks like. Tonight in northern sections, periods of snow, some sleet mixing in at times. In central sections, freezing rain, sleet changing to rain from south to north. In the southern sections, periods of rain. Low temps will take place this evening, and then they'll range from 25 in the north to 42 in the south. Temperatures will slowly rise toward the morning. Tomorrow in northern and northwestern parts of Illinois, periods of snow, some additional accumulation likely. Elsewhere, rain likely in the morning, then turning to snow showers and flurries by the afternoon. High temps tomorrow will be from 30 in the north to 50 in the south.
Agricultural programming is made possible by Stuart Peterson. For over 20 years, Stuart Peterson has helped farmers manage both marketing opportunities and risks through their analysis, advice, and action. Stuart Peterson, confidence like never before. More information is available at www.stuart-peterson.com.
Todd Gleason services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report. It's a Tuesday afternoon. John Hester at L&M Commodities in Newmarket, Indiana, is on the line with us this afternoon. Hi, John.
Hi, Todd. How are you?
I take it Wayne has taken the day off, getting ready for a big Christmas celebration.
He's getting ready for a Christmas celebration. Yes, he is.
Well, in typical Wayne Nelson style, whenever he has a big bash, there's always bad weather, so that's the way it's going to go, I suppose.
Yeah, we got a pretty, well, it's not a thick layer of ice, but we got a thin layer of ice on everything over here now, so.
Yeah, I came in to this office in Urbana about 12:30 today, and it was an ice skating rink at that time. I dropped over the hill from home and put the brakes on to make a left at the bottom of the hill, and I was running all. I was only going about 40 or 50 mile an hour. It was raining, and I slid a block and a half. Well, of course, part of that, I must admit, part of that was just my old farm boy. And I thought, you know, I want to see how far I'll go. So I put the brakes on harder. I have the anti-lock brakes. I wouldn't buy a vehicle without it anymore. And
so we had a little fun, man.
Yeah, we had a little fun. Hey, speaking of fun, today was not so bad in Chicago. Quite a bit of green on the screen when we got done with the day.
Yeah, it was a nice, unexpected rally today. It was very light volume, which means, it didn't take a lot of buyers or sellers to move the market in either direction. The day there was more buyers and sellers and light trade, and it rallied very nicely. Funds were light buyers. I've read or heard a rumor from the floor that there was a couple funds that were wanting to spread egg products against industrial products, meaning buying corn and beans and selling gold, silver, copper, lead, and that sort of thing. So
the idea there is that the food would be more valuable in the long run than the metals would be.
Right. Kind of deflationary.
And would you think that that's correct, or do you have an opinion there?
I really don't have an opinion, but it looks like, for the last 3 or 4 days, that could very easily be possible because, the metals have been mixed down about every day and the grain market's been mixed up about every day. So I couldn't argue with the fact. And, furthermore, we've still got dry weather in South America. And, if it stays dry down there, that's going to be positive our markets. And, some of the experts are saying that the seasonal lows are in, and the other half of the experts are saying that this is just a normal seasonal holiday rally, and after the first of the year we may go back down and test the lows again.
Well, John, is there anything else to add before I let you go for the day?
No, I just want to wish everybody a very Merry Christmas and a prosperous New Year, and drive safely.
John, thank you very, very much.
All right, bye.
You have a good evening. That's John Hester. He's with L&M Commodities out of Newmarket, Indiana. Somebody from that office joins us here on the Closing Market Report on Tuesday afternoons.
Agricultural programs are made possible by First Midwest Bank, serving Illinois' agricultural community with locations in Champaign, Danville, Galesburg, Morris, and McHenry. More information is available from Mike Morris in McHenry at 815-344-7213. First Midwest Bank, member FDIC, an equal housing lender.
Hope you get a chance to visit our website. The address is willag.org. Dave Dickey is here now. He'll take you through the agricultural news for the afternoon.
In agriculture, agricultural news. China today is responding to a U.S. filing at the World Trade Organization against PRC exports. A China foreign ministry official says there are some different opinions between the two countries on trade, and these differences should be solved through equal consultations. In a case filed Friday, the U.S. said China was violating global trade rules administered by the WTO in the way it operates a Famous Brands program to promote the sale of Chinese goods overseas. A former U.S. trade negotiator says that planned or approved U.S. bailouts for the auto manufacturers, the financial sector, and others, along with continuing subsidies to some, could make some U.S. exports vulnerable to countervailing duties by other countries. According to Christopher Parlin, government support of private industry and the financial sector can be justified if the purpose is to provide time for companies to develop long-term solutions to business problems. In the current case, however, the bailouts and other subsidies under consideration in Washington are intended, Parlin says, quote, to cover industry losses. Clearly, this is WTO prohibited. OPEC's president today says that OPEC could decide in mid-January to hold extraordinary meetings before March if it sees that global oil prices continue to slide because of weakening demand. Some OPEC ministers will attend an Arab Economic Summit scheduled for January 19th in Kuwait, which could be a forum for the group to look again at the oil market situation. Last week, OPEC oil ministers agreed at a meeting in Algeria to their deepest output cut of 2.2 million barrels per day in a bid to balance supply with rapidly crumbling demand. Verisun is seeking court permission to rework an ethanol marketing agreement it has with Shell Trading Company. According to court documents, Verisun owed Shell about $9.2 million prior to the Chapter 11 bankruptcy filing on October 31st. In addition, Shell still owed Verisun about $10.1 million in other invoices not paid, also prior to the bankruptcy. According to the motion, Verisun wants the court to approve an agreement that would include Shell paying $5 million to Verisun, then Shell would pay an additional $921,000 to cut what it owes to Verisun to about $4.1 million. In return, Shell would keep the remaining $4.1 million it owes as a partial cure payment to what Verisun owes Shell on the true price for ethanol. An Oil World Today says drought in South American soybean acres will result in smaller than expected crops in countries such as Argentina and Paraguay in early 2009. Oil World expected a decline of at least 500,000 to 1 million tons from its previous estimate of 49.5 million to 50 million tons in Argentina. USDA's current estimate for Argentina is 50.5 million metric tons. And that's a look at today's agricultural news.
Hey, thanks, Dave. Dave Dickey is Director of Agricultural Programming at WILL, Public Radio for the Farming World.
Agricultural programming is made possible by Lernard Seed Service, an independent dealer providing DeKalb and Asgrow seed products, including Asgrow's new Roundup Ready 2-yield soybeans. Lernard Seed Service provides services to help customers in East Central Illinois maximize profits. 217-497-2270.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report on a Tuesday afternoon. Mike Wolverton, Kansas State University Extension's Grains and Biofuels Ag Economist, now joins us to take up the agricultural markets and the impact of the lower price of corn and crude oil on the ethanol industry, among other things. Good afternoon to you, Mike.
Good afternoon, Todd.
Well, let's start with the good news and bad news. If there's any good news, maybe we should start with that. But if not, we can delve into the bad news and what the price of crude has done to the profitability of the ethanol industry across the Midwest.
Well, it's pretty dismal. And what I'm trying to do here at the end of the year is take a look at where we are now and where we might go in 2009. And you're certainly right about what oil price has done to the ethanol industry. Oil prices come down $100 a barrel, and it's brought the price of ethanol down considerably. Also, price of corn has come down, but price of ethanol has come down more than corn, and that has put ethanol producers in a negative situation. They're now losing, according to my economic model here, about 20 cents a gallon on each gallon of ethanol they sell. The financially sound ethanol plants are still making money and can survive, largely due to the DDG sales, which is offsetting the loss in ethanol. But there's no doubt about it, it's a difficult time for ethanol producers right now.
This comes back to a squeeze on the top side when prices were really high for the price of corn. Verison, of course, got into trouble at that point. I suspect there might be a few other plants that would be in the same boat. Was there a time where they were really profitable other than prior to March of last year?
Well, I think even up until midsummer, the ethanol plants were doing quite well. And then when the price of oil fell and the price of corn fell, then that's when they started getting into trouble. What the big problem Verison had was that they had contracted to buy corn at very high prices and ended up then processing that corn into ethanol and selling it at low prices. So they really got themselves in a squeeze. Had to declare bankruptcy, and the bankruptcy judge then allowed them to break their contracts with farmers. So they got out of that high-priced corn contracts. But there's a price to pay for that as well, because I'm sure there are some farmers that will never do business with Verison again.
Well, I have a question about that. Darrell Good and I traveled last week with the Illinois Ag Economic Farm Economic Summits, and we had a discussion about this, a very short discussion, as to what a corn contract might mean if the court system was going to come in and break it. Has there been much discussion legally or among ag economists about the wide-ranging prospects for what that court decided?
Well, I've had discussions with farmers about this, and they were asking me, well, should I go ahead and deliver my corn on the contract? And I said, well, you're legally obligated to deliver on the contract. But then the problem is getting payment. I think farmers are really put in a really difficult situation here, because they have to deliver on their contracts, then in many cases stand in line with other creditors to get the money back. And so this is going to drag out for quite some time until those farmers are compensated for their corn.
The flip side of that, of course, was that Verison was using, I think, the futures markets as a strategy. And the futures markets got their money.
They did. And so, you know, it's just Verison is in a terrible situation right now. They're one of the three largest ethanol producers in the United States, or were. They have now closed down some plants. But this industry is going through a tremendous consolidation in 2009, I think. Someone will buy the Verison assets and run them. But it probably won't. The Verison name probably will disappear, because I just don't think people want to do business with them anymore.
Well, they won't want to do business with them. You're thinking that the capacity that's there will be purchased and won't be idled. What does that mean for the prospects for the industry over 2009 then?
Well, I think we have to look a little bit to the political support side of this, because Congress raised the ethanol blending rate to 10.2%. Which would create a demand for about 14 billion gallons of ethanol. And this past year, 2008, we were in a slight overcapacity situation in the ethanol industry. In 2009, we're going to be in an undercapacity situation. So I think that bodes well for the ethanol industry. Of course, everyone's waiting to see what this new administration's policies on renewable energy will be. But so far, people are happy with the team that President-elect Obama has put together.
Do you have an idea of what the blending mandate, and my understanding is that it's by company, but what the blending mandate is and what happens if they don't happen to meet those mandates, should capacity not be there?
Well, I've taken a look at that, and from what I can tell, there are no mandate police out there checking up on ethanol plants. Up until now, we've relied on the carrot of the blenders' tax credit to get the gasoline blenders to buy ethanol. But that blender's tax credit is due to sunset at the end of 2009, and we'll have to then rely on the stick. And so the mandate then will have to kick in. And so this will play itself out in 2009 as we look ahead at what's going to happen to government policy with respect to ethanol.
I think my understanding is that there is an economic incentive on the other side, too, that if they don't meet the mandate, that they may end up taking a charge one way or the other.
Well, that's the stick. And right. And so we're going to have to see how that works. You know, it's interesting. We're just now celebrating the one-year anniversary of the Energy Security and Independence Act of 2007. Up until then, ethanol was an additive to gasoline as an oxygenate. But that 2007 Act then now requires the use of ethanol and other renewable fuels to reduce the dependence on foreign oil.
Right.
And so we've kind of changed our government policy with respect to ethanol, and that has allowed Congress then to raise the mandate above that which would just call for oxygenate. So we're really playing in a new ballgame right now.
You think Congress will have the political will to stay the course?
That's going to be the big question, Todd. When we see oil price down in the $30 range, below $40, it's going to be a test of our political will to carry on with this renewable energy initiative, of which ethanol and other biofuels are part of. Right now, I think it's there because I think the political will is there because people are still concerned about being dependent on foreign oil producers and what we might see in the coming years. And so for right now, the political will is there. We'll have to see what happens in this next year.
About 2.5 minutes left. I'd like to switch gears just a bit to discuss the relationship between corn, ethanol, and crude oil, if I could.
So there
seems to be, of the last not quite 18 months, but maybe 9 or 10 months, certainly a relationship that has developed over 18 months, but that has hooked corn, crude, ethanol, and the RBOB together in some form. Do you think that will stay in place given the load price of crude oil? Or are there other things that could unhook this relationship?
Well, this relationship has been pretty closely tied together, oil, ethanol, and corn prices. And we've seen this huge drop in oil price, and along with it, ethanol and corn prices have dropped. I think this next year, 2009, we're going to test that relationship. And I think the thing that may be the test is the corn plantings in the spring of 2009. Current estimates are for planting about 82 million acres, but my calculations are if we're going to meet the ethanol mandate, we're going to need 86 million acres of corn to cover all the uses and give a comfortable carryover. And I think we have to also look at the economic situation for 2009, and here we have to come back. It's ironic, really, but the low price of oil and gasoline is really helping to reduce the depth and the length of this recession. The current RBOB price would call for a pump price on gasoline of about $1.45 per gallon. And so the OPEC nations really are, if you want to put it this way, subsidizing the American consumers to the tune of about $20 or $25 billion per month, putting money back in their pocket, helping us come out of this recession. In fact, consumer confidence improved a little bit in this last report. And so I think we're going to see the economy stabilize in 2009, maybe start a recovery at the end of 2009, 2010. And to answer your opening question, Todd, I think that
20 seconds.
Reduction in production and investment in agriculture and in energy markets may be setting us up for the next commodity price cycle. And so when this economy does recover, global economy, we may see commodity prices really spring back up again.
Thanks much, Mike. Mike Wolverton from Manhattan, Kansas.
It's National Pfeffernuss Day. On this day in agricultural history in 1675, Charles II of England issued a proclamation suppressing coffee houses. The public response was so negative that he revoked it on January 8th of 1676. In part, the proclamation declared, "Whereas it is most apparent that the multitude of coffee houses of late years set up and kept within this kingdom, and the great resort of idle and disaffected persons to them, have produced very evil and dangerous effects, His Majesty hath thought it fit and necessary that the said coffee houses be, for the future, put down and suppressed." In 1901, Sir Joseph Henry Gilbert died, an English chemist. He is the co-inventor of superphosphate fertilizer. Superphosphate is a compound produced by treating rock phosphate with sulfuric acid, phosphorus acid, or a mixture of the two. In 1893, Sir John Bennett Laws opened the first fertilizer factory, thus initiating the artificial fertilizer industry. The following year, Gilbert joined him, and they began a collaboration lasting more than half a century. And in 1982, the Environmental Protection Agency announced it had found dangerous levels of dioxin in Times Beach, Missouri. Eventually, the EPA purchased the town for $32 billion, quarantined the site, and spent $110 million for cleanup. And that's this day in agricultural history.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report. It's a Tuesday afternoon. I'm Todd Gleason. Joining us now for a look at the agricultural weather is Don Day of Day Weather out of Cheyenne, Wyoming. Good afternoon to you, Don.
Good afternoon.
Tell me about the weather in the Midwest. We recorded this at about 1:12, and I was on the road this afternoon at 12:30 in Champaign County, and what a skating rink. Is it likely to get better or worse as the day goes on?
Well, probably worse. It's going to really depend in many areas where the warmer air and the colder air are going to be mixing up just right for the freezing rain and the ice, and then the areas that are further north and west are going to be mostly snow. But what we've got, Todd, here is a weather pattern that not only in the short term, but at least through Christmas week here, and into early next week, is going to be testing everybody's patience as systems just keep slamming the Pacific Northwest, moving very quickly through the Rockies, then right here into the Midwest, producing this very wintry mix that we have. And at least through probably Christmas Eve tomorrow, it's going to be very wintry here in the Midwest.
Tell me more details about how wintry it will be.
Well, we've got areas of snow that is going to be very common, developing tonight and tomorrow across portions of Iowa, portions of southeast Nebraska, and into northern Missouri. Then that's going to be moving into Illinois, Indiana, Michigan as we get on into late tonight and during the day tomorrow, and all the way through tomorrow afternoon and evening. Now, by Christmas morning, this will all be gone, but cold air will settle in, cold high pressure, so Christmas Day will be clearing out, but cold.
Clearing out and cold, and then what do we do if we're trying to travel back home once we get back to Friday and Saturday and Sunday?
Well, there's good news and bad news. If you're going to be traveling east of the Mississippi, I think Friday we're going to find good weather, as the Great Lakes, New England, the southeast United States, many areas of the Midwest will have some high pressure to help out with some better weather. Now, this is going to change, though, as we get into the weekend, as we'll see snow breaking out across Minneapolis, St. Paul, Wisconsin, the northern Great Lakes, as yet another storm comes out of the Rockies. So if you've got travel plans for Friday, I think you're going to be okay just after Christmas. But the weekend thereafter, as we get into Saturday and Sunday, areas of snow and rain and unsettled weather will break out across many areas of the upper plains and Midwest.
Winter in the northern hemisphere, but in the southern hemisphere, much warmer in the middle of the growing season.
In the middle of the growing season, and as we go into the southern hemisphere, we see that Brazil and Argentina, which have had some decent rain, especially Brazil, going to continue that trend. It looks like an active weather pattern down there. Both countries, both growing areas, key areas of Argentina, Brazil, have some decent chances for moisture over the next week.
We know we've been bouncing back and forth between whether they're dry or not. Where are they at this point?
Well, it really depends, obviously, where you're going, but Argentina, still dry. Brazil in a much better situation with soil moisture there in better shape. Most of the growing areas of Argentina,
still running a deficit when we take a look at soil moisture profiles down there.
Anything else to add before I let you go for the day?
Well, be good. You still have enough time here between now and Christmas to squeeze in some more Christmas weather, but it does look like the new year may bring some better conditions.
Thanks much, Don.
Thank you.
Don Day is with Day Weather out of Cheyenne, Wyoming. He joins us here on the Closing Mark Report. That happens each and every Tuesday afternoon. If you'd like to hear what Don has to say or anything that came from the Closing Mark Report, other ag programming you heard throughout the day, you can always visit our website at willag.org. That's willag.org. To update yourself with the latest MP3 files and sign up for the podcast or the newsletter, it's all at willag.org. You have a great afternoon. Stay safe. Stay home. I'm Todd Gleason.